I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, once again, Washington State is giving sanctuary to violent, vile criminals. We'll have some exclusive reporting. Plus, Seattle wants to hire a costly consultant to help them figure out how to combat so-called gun violence. And Democrats in Washington State are railing against Trump's cuts to health care, but they're conveniently ignoring the cuts that they made to healthcare. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We start today with some exclusive reporting. Rape in the second degree, rape in the third degree, attempted rape in the second degree, unlawful imprisonment. Those are our charges against a man who came into this country illegally and who Washington State gave sanctuary to. Unlawful imprisonment. Rape in the second degree, rape in the third degree, attempted rape in the second degree, robbery in the first degree, robbery in the second degree, theft in the first degree, negligent driving, driving with a suspended license. That is the criminal history of a man who this country gave the gift of citizenship to. The gift of citizenship to one of the greatest countries on earth. And that's what he did with it. He robbed people. He stole from people. He raped teen girls, allegedly. This is the headline that explains the background of this. From King 5 News, men accused of raping two Olympia teenagers. You've probably seen that on the Seattle TV stations in the last 24 hours. It says King County prosecutors charged two men with rape and unlawful imprisonment of two Olympia girls ages 15 and 17 after an incident in mid-August. King County prosecutors charged 27-year-old Josu Orozco with first and second degree rape and two counts of unlawful imprisonment. Another man, 19-year-old Moises Gardella Marugo, received one count of attempted second degree rape. So you've seen those stories, but obviously exclusive to us is we have a source telling us that one of those individuals is in the country illegally. And in fact, their mother, also in the country illegally from Colombia, has an active ICE warrant out for her deportation from the country. The other individual, we're told, was at some point a naturalized U.S. citizen. We want to figure out when exactly this individual was naturalized and if they had any criminal history whatsoever before that process was completed. So here's what we know about this case and about these two men. Again, Josu and Moises. So a 15-year-old female and a 17-year-old female, both from Olympia, told police that they had agreed to meet up with the younger suspect, the 19-year-old suspect, Moises. They were trying to get alcohol and weed from him. And look, before you read too much into the who the hell at 17 wasn't trying to get alcohol and weed from people, I'll be honest with you, maybe not weed, but for sure at 17 and probably even 15, I was trying to get alcohol from people. So I'm not going to judge these two teen girls whatsoever. 15 and 17 years old, try to meet up with this 19-year-old, trying to get alcohol, trying to get weed. Moises met the girls at a church property in Olympia, accompanied by his friend Josu Orozco, again, 27 years old. Moises and Josu invited the girls into their van and then revealed to them that they were going to Seattle. One of the girls protested. She didn't want to go to Seattle. She didn't even know one of the guys. But they gave her alcohol. She eventually relented, and they all went to Seattle. The men drove the girls to Josu's home near the city of Renton in unincorporated King County. There, Josu proceeded to lock one of the girls, the 15-year-old girl, in his bedroom where he vaginally raped her. After she had been assaulted, Josu locked the other girl, 17 years old, in the same room and orally and vaginally raped her. The men released the girls at a nearby grocery store. And Moises, the 19-year-old who was allegedly friends with one of the girls, is complicit to all the acts then that occurred. Unlawful imprisonment, rape. So police start to investigate this. One of the girls went home, told her father what happened. Her father contacted law enforcement. They start to investigate this. They put a takedown team together, come up with a plan to stake out these two individuals after identifying them. Ended up coming in with a SWAT team and arresting them. I think this is very telling, this line in the charging document. Hozu expressed relief to learn that we were with the sheriff's office instead of any kind of federal law enforcement. I think that tells you so much of what you need to know about this state and the criminal justice system and some of the details I'm about to reveal. This guy's arrested by a SWAT team. And he tells the King County deputy that he's relieved to learn that they're not federal law enforcement. It says, at this point, we told Hosu that the search time at his house had located a safe. We asked him for the code because we were going to access it one way or another. Hosu visually paled and declined to provide the code to his safe to us. More on that in a moment. Hosu, for his part, has a lengthy criminal history. Again, he's 27 years old, but he has a criminal history, as far as we can tell, dating back at least 13 years to when he was a juvenile. We're unclear if Moises has a criminal history, although when I searched his name in the court database, there appeared to be some sealed juvenile records. He just turned 19, and so that makes sense. But as far as Hozu goes, in Washington state, he's been arrested on 9 separate occasions for offenses, including 2 felony robberies, a robbery with a weapon, firearm possession, unlawful, 5 gross misdemeanors, including negligent driving, driving with a suspended license, driving under the influence. He has multiple convictions in Washington state, including robbery 2, theft 1, robbery 1, negligent driving 1, and an active pending case for the ignition interlock violation and driving with a suspended license in the third degree. So they get arrested by this SWAT team in the case involving the 2 teen girls from Olympia, where they're accused of taking them up to the Seattle area, keeping them against their will, sexually assaulting them. So the charges against Hosu and Moises now pending from the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, and of course it doesn't mention in the documents immigration status or anything like that, because as far as King County and Washington State are concerned, the immigration status doesn't matter. I don't even need to... It is so hard for even members of the press to get a hold of someone's immigration status, because here they keep it a secret. Oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you came to this country illegally and raped one of our teenagers. We're going to hide that information from you. So again, count 1, unlawful imprisonment, count 2, rape in the second degree, count 3, unlawful imprisonment, count 4, rape in the third degree, count 5, attempted rape in the second degree. Now, they're being held on fairly high bail, relatively speaking, for King County. Hosu is being held on $500,000 bail. The younger defendant, Moises Marugo, is being held on $200,000 bail. But it doesn't stop there. Hosu Orozco has another little problem on his hands. Simultaneous to this rape investigation, King County finds out that Thurston County and a drug task force have an ongoing investigation into Hosu Orozco. And that investigation yielded this. A bunch of money, a bunch of drugs, illegal firearms. Apparently, they were eyeing him for some time in connection with a drug trafficking ring that, you guessed it, traffics drugs up to Washington State from Mexico. Weird, isn't it? It's weird how that keeps happening. Here's what Thurston County Sheriff Derek Sanders posted about this. On September 2nd, detectives assigned to the Narcotics Task Force concluded an investigation into a convicted felon narcotics dealer living in Kent who was responsible for the flow of fentanyl and cocaine into Thurston County. The suspect was also wanted by King County sheriffs for rape and kidnapping. He was arrested without incident while numerous search warrants were executed simultaneously at numerous locations in King County. No wonder. So that takes you back to why he suddenly went pale when the King County sheriff's detective said, "Hey, buddy, we found your safe. What's the code to it?" also might explain why he was temporarily relieved to find out that they were King County Sheriff's detectives and not, you know, federal agents who would actually care about things like immigration status and naturalization and, you know, I don't know, might actually like hold him accountable for his crimes. So Sheriff Sanders says they found 387 grams of fentanyl, 1,900 grams of cocaine, four firearms, $16,000 cash, gold jewelry, a Freightliner tow truck, a Chevy Monte Carlo, and a Chevy C8 Corvette. At Corvette, you know, you can buy nice cars when you're dealing drugs and killing people in Washington State with those narcotics. So all of this to say, when we're in a state like Washington, and it's frustrating to me that this even has to be said, this is not rare. This is the stuff we find out about. And we only find out about it through tips. Thurston County wouldn't be able to come out and say, hey, this guy is one of these guys is also illegal. King County, they don't even know. I have sources with King County. You don't think I called and said, first time I saw those names, hey, is that guy illegal? There's no way for them to tell. These guys both have Washington State driver's licenses. One is a driver's license, one is an ID card. Because we give driver's licenses to illegals. So they pull up the database as far as they know. These people are just like anybody else. And so these are the ones we find out about. Imagine how many instances of illegal aliens or naturalized citizens who have been given the gift of citizenship to our country who come here and who come to a sanctuary state like Washington and use it as cover to commit their crimes, to rape, allegedly, teenage girls. To peddle drugs into our communities. And Democrats don't see an issue with that. They take the sides of violent, vile criminals over the side of a 15 and a 17-year-old girl who are sexually assaulted? I don't understand in what universe any of this makes sense. And there are people out there who protest any kind of ICE arrest or deportation effort from the Trump administration because the orange man is just so bad. Really? Is he as bad as them? So it doesn't matter if it's a murderer, if it's a rapist. The media will spin these sob stories. They definitely won't mention if they're illegal or not. And it's never about the finer points. I have to believe if you poll Americans, 95% of them would say, yeah, we probably shouldn't give sanctuary to, you know, rapists and murderers or drug traffickers. But in the court of public opinion, in this like media echo chamber that we have, that's somehow controversial. You don't allow one of these individuals in the country? Well, maybe the rape doesn't happen. Maybe the drug trafficking doesn't happen. So a few things, we've reached out to ICE for confirmation on a few things. National origin, I know that one of the individuals, their mom at least is Colombian. I believe they have Cuban citizenship and then came here by way of Colombia. So we want to know point of entry, date of entry. I do know that now that ICE is aware of it, once this individual, if they end up bailing out, will probably be picked up by federal agents because guess what? King County won't hand them over. King County's not going to pick up the phone and say, hey, ICE, got this guy, you know, one of the suspects in the rape of the two teen girls. Just wanted to let you know he made bail because they clearly have a lot of cash lying around, although it was seized, so maybe they don't. No, you don't do that either because you're protecting them rather than doing the obvious thing and saying, ICE, get down here. Hold this guy. He made bail. You can hold him indefinitely. You know, and then you can deport him from the country. So that's another hurdle. But we also want to know for the individual who I'm told by a source is a naturalized U.S. citizen, when was he naturalized? Is it before the criminal conduct that he was convicted for prior to this latest incident? Or is it after the criminal conduct? Because I would be quite disturbed if we gave U.S. citizenship to someone who had convictions dating back 13 years, including things like robbery with a deadly weapon and unlawful possession of a firearm. So yeah, I mean, call me racist all you want. Second I saw those names, I was like, boop, 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 calling sources like, are they in the country illegally? Because that's just become so commonplace. And the media won't tell you, even if ICE came out and sent every single media outlet a press release today saying, hey, this person's in the country illegally. They're accused of raping teen girls. You know if any news outlets would actually report that in the city of Seattle? Probably two. I'm going to go with David Rose at Fox 13 and Como News. Probably the only two news outlets who would be brave enough to put in their reporting that an accused rapist is in the country illegally. It's absolutely outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous. And then at the same time, all it is sympathy, sympathy, sympathy from the media. It's not just like they're kind of neutral on the issue. They ignore the violent criminals who are hurting Americans. And they don't ignore it. They paint them as sympathetic characters. And as paint any attacks on them, any efforts to expose who some of them really are, as somehow political. Remember we talked about this aliens website the White House launched on? It was like people thought it was going to be a story about aliens and the White House putting all this information up. And it said, they walk among us. For 60 years, the U.S. government has kept a closely guarded secret. Then it talks about like aliens, and then it reveals that they're talking about illegal aliens. And it lists and has a real-time tracker of how many encounters they've had. And then you can click on this map and it'll tell you, you know, where in your area illegal aliens have been arrested and the kind of criminal charges. And then it'll tell you their country of origin and possible gang affiliation. And I think that's a pretty useful tool. And so they kind of played off of the space alien. And then, no, illegal aliens. We already know. We already have aliens here that walk amongst us that wish to do us harm. And they're the kind that commit arson, assault, burglary, sexual offenses, etc., etc., etc. And they're from all over the world and they're invading. But how does the media cover that? Well, that is not very nice. That's just not very nice. Some of the headlines. Trump's new alien website exploits UFO intrigue to demean immigrants. Dangerous speech in disguise. The White House's new aliens website is not a joke. This from local station Fox 13. White House alien website sparks backlash from civil rights advocates. This is who they're worried about. They're worried about it being demeaning to immigrants. The White House isn't talking about immigrants. The White House is talking about illegal aliens. Two very distinct things. And you want to say that a website is demeaning them? Well, I think it's pretty demeaning to lock a 15-year-old girl and a 17-year-old girl in your bedroom and rape them. I think that's pretty demeaning. But which type of demeaning does the press care about? Oh, you made a website and it pokes fun at illegal aliens who've committed horrible crimes. How dare you? Let's get the civil rights advocates involved. What about the civil rights advocates for the two girls? Are you going to get the civil rights advocates involved? Someone going to advocate for them and the trauma that they're going to experience probably for the rest of their lives over what happened to them? It just tells you everything you need to know about the media and also the government. You know, Seattle has had this string of gang violence and shootings that's getting progressively worse, a lot of it involving young men of color. But even if you go to the Seattle Police Department's website, they have something called the SPD blotter, and it basically updates the public on things going on. Still today, the pinned post on their site, meaning the post they want the public to see when they go there, it's not the latest crime investigation or anything like that. It's a post that explained Seattle police restates values on federal immigration enforcement. That's what the Seattle Police Department is putting first and foremost on their messaging arm. What the public sees when they go to their website seeking information on violent crimes and maybe, I don't know, some of these deadly shootings that have happened. Nope, virtue signaling, pin. We want to know that this is a accepting community. It's like, okay, well, what does that have to really do with you? We want you to investigate crimes. We already know you're not going to arrest and deport the illegals, that ICE has to come in and do this. But it shows their priorities. The priority is virtue signaling. Above all else, and really not a surprise, considering you have a city council full of people who are virtue signalers, and you have a mayor that is the virtue signaler in chief. And if the answer to fighting some of this gang violence we're seeing would be, let's say we had and I don't think this is the case, but let's say we had a very active cartel gang that was killing people in the city. I think you have some of that, but typically we're dealing with smaller street-level gangs involving the African-American community. But even if you had a cartel gang, like, just massacring people across the city, some sort of massive Mexican cartel gang war, the city of Seattle would think of every single possible way to fix it except having ICE help them deport those people from the country. Because virtue signaling has to come first. It comes before everything. It comes before human life. So there's this debate happening right now in the city after all these shootings happened, where, this is from the Seattle Times, Seattle council members want new gun violence strategy. Mayor's plan is TBD. It's not a surprise. Yeah, the mayor's plan, we don't really know her plan yet, but some Seattle city council members are saying, hey, we want a proven approach to dealing with gun violence. To which I would say, well, the very first thing you could do is stop calling it gun violence. I feel like that would be a really good step, to stop blaming it on an inanimate object and call it what it is, which is gang violence. So let's talk first about the city council approach. And this is what is being floated by city council member Maritza Rivera. After hosting a symposium in June about gun violence prevention, Seattle City Council member Maritza Rivera on Tuesday introduced a resolution to pursue an evidence-based strategy that has seen significant reductions in gun violence in cities across the country. It will be up to Mayor Katie Wilson to include $418,000 in the city's next budget for a 2-year pilot program employing a consultant with the National Network for Safer Communities at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. The network strategy calls for focused deterrence of a small number of people committing most of the city's shootings and homicides. And unlike other intervention programs, it includes law enforcement as a key partner alongside community groups and outreach workers. Yeah, no shit. I would hope that law enforcement would be a key partner in trying to deal with people who are committing shootings and murders. And here's the thing, after hearing that, that's the better of the two plans. But it's also still stupid. Think about this. You want to spend $400,000 on a consultant to tell you how to fight shootings and murders? I'll do it for free. Put people in jail. Put people in prison. Prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. Stop passing stupid laws in Olympia like the ones that allow a juvenile to be caught with a gun 5 times before they're even prosecuted for it. Hold people accountable for their conduct. Hire more police officers. Don't vilify police officers so they flee the city en masse. Allow them to do their jobs. To fight crime. There you go, free advice. You need to hire a consultant from New York City of all places to come in and tell you how to do what? And I'm glad that they say that it would include law enforcement as a key partner. Again, yeah, how would it not? What is a community group or an outreach worker going to do? Go up to gangbangers on the street corner and say, hey, son, have you thought about putting the gun down? Like, what are you even doing? Why do we have to spend $400,000 on that? And then there's the mayor's strategy, which is, again, TBD. She says, I think this coming week, she's going to announce what her gun violence strategy is. But based on her past activism, we know that she's not going to want police involved in it. It says, in a statement posted on social media Tuesday, the mayor wrote, quote, the data shows us what works. Community violence interruption and focused deterrence, investing in public safety as well as public health, and building a resilient economy with good jobs and shared prosperity. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. Wilson also said she plans to announce a, quote, comprehensive, focused gun violence prevention strategy next week, as well as investments toward reducing violence in her proposed budget in the coming weeks. I have such good news for you. You don't have to spend a dime. You actually don't have to spend a dime above what you're already spending on police and what the county spends on prosecutors. You have cops. You have prosecutors. Let the cops arrest criminals. Let the prosecutors prosecute criminals. And politicians get out of the way. Stop every single legislative session passing laws that seek to reduce punishments for criminals who use guns. Stupid laws like trying to end life without parole for people who murder someone in a drive-by shooting. Stupid proposals like the ones that would eliminate gun enhancements for certain types of crime, while you're making it more difficult for law-abiding citizens to get their hands legally on firearms. They want to reduce punishments for felons who shouldn't have a firearm in the first place, who use that firearm or threaten to use that firearm to hurt someone or to commit a crime. Everything you're doing, I'm preaching to the freaking choir. You guys know this, but everything they're doing is almost as if it's intentionally designed to make crime worse. If I had to devise a strategy to make crime worse, I would say, well, reduce punishments, tie the hands of police, threaten to defund the police so a bunch of them leave, so they're way understaffed, call it racist anytime prosecutors file charges against anyone of color, definitely do that, and then it'll deter them and lead to sweetheart plea deals, install judges that are soft on crime, that let people out with little to no bail. And then we'll create like an apocalyptic situation and people will be so desperate, they've been disarmed, it'll be so dangerous that they will come begging the government for help and they will give up their rights, they will give up their autonomy if only the government will help them feel safe again. And that's what leads to socialism, that's what leads to communism, that's what leads to authoritarianism. And so to me, it feels like it's all done by design. All done by design. I don't need $400,000 to tell you how to fight crime. You don't need $400,000 to tell you how to fight crime. You fight crime by fighting crime. It really is that simple. All right, coming up next, Democrats are blaming Trump for cuts to healthcare, but they're just conveniently ignoring the fact that they too made a bunch of cuts to healthcare, like just a couple months ago. We'll discuss. First, we get wonderful emails from undivided viewers and listeners all the time about the First Mark Challenge. Tara says, I switched my homeowners to First Mark, saved $1,600 a year. I have far better coverage. Man, that is just a win-win. You too can take the First Mark Challenge. So far, there have been 11,000 First Mark Challenge success stories. And look, you know, it's so simple. It doesn't cost a thing. You go to firstmarkinsurance.com. You have them look into your current insurance and just see if they can beat it. If they can get you better insurance for a better price. Or they'll just say, hey, you've got great insurance. I'd keep it. I mean, that's what they told Greg, who's one of our viewers. He said, I did the First Mark Challenge really easy and quick. They came back in 2 days telling me my policy was good. They couldn't improve on it for the price. He said, great service. And it's just the sign of an honest company as well. So don't give your insurance company a free raise. Before you renew, let First Mark review. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com. What are you waiting for? Your savings could start tomorrow. And you too could be part of the growing First Mark family. All right. So Democrats in Washington state have been complaining about Trump cuts to healthcare endlessly. So Governor Bob Ferguson held a press conference. He's signing an executive order that he says will form a task force. I'm so sick of task forces. Good grief. Didn't we send you? Well, I didn't send you anywhere, Bob Ferguson, but didn't voters send you to Olympia and lawmakers to Olympia to do this work? Why do we send lawmakers to Olympia to just create government task forces to deal with the problems that I thought that they were going to Olympia to deal with? But here's Governor Ferguson at his press conference.
It's establishing a formal committee, the HR 1 Continuous Medicaid Response Committee. The order also directs a coordinated statewide public awareness campaign, which is extremely important. We're working as hard as we can to reach those folks who are being impacted. And so this will be an actual statewide campaign focused on getting the word out to all impacted Washingtonians.
Yeah, oh, it's so bad. And he said the cuts are so bad, he really just wants you to make sure that you are definitely telling your friends about what Trump has done to healthcare.
We're here, of course, to talk about the healthcare impacts, that is an understatement, of HR 1 on Washington residents, what I refer to as the Big Bad Betrayal Bill adopted back by Congress. It's cruel and it is wrong. The impacts to Washington state are very, very significant. Help us spread the word. Tell a friend. Tell your family members. Communicate with those who are your loved ones, your friends, your workers, your coworkers, and talk about this to make them aware of these truly draconian changes and cuts that are coming our way.
Interesting. Put a pin in that, because there is a reason he really, really, really wants you to tell all your friends about these draconian cuts. So he was asked questions, since we're in a budget crisis, how do you plan to pay for the task force and all this stuff?
We're going through a lengthy budget process, and while it is, of course, impossible to backfill all that, we do look to see if there are targeted aspects of that, given our budget challenges, which are significant, where we can do something to mitigate it further.
Yeah, so he is not the only one who is trying to beat the drum on this. United States Senator Patty Murray was recently at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle to bring awareness for these draconian cuts. She says, she claims, over 50,000 Washington residents have lost their Medicaid Apple Care coverage, which provides health insurance to either free or at low cost to people with limited income. She claims hospitals in the state could lose at least $662 million in Medicaid revenue every single year, and that there are 22 hospitals at risk of closing or reducing services. Here is Senator Patty Murray at Harborview.
Republicans passed the big ugly bill. Huge cuts to Medicaid, and impacts everyone and their costs for health care. Not extending the tax credits is having a huge impact. We need to have a country where health care is affordable for everyone. These cuts, these impacts that Republicans are putting on families and communities is hurting everyone. It's got to stop.
Now, there's a couple things going on here. One, some of this has to do, and their efforts to raise awareness for this definitely have to do with the initiative that's on the ballot in November to repeal the income tax on quote-unquote millionaires. But the other thing that's important to point out is, as they travel the state and have press conferences complaining about Trump's cuts to healthcare, they are conveniently ignoring their own cuts to healthcare. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. Luckily, since the press won't do it, there are some individuals calling out Democrats for conveniently ignoring the fact that they too have made cuts to healthcare. State Representative Matt Marshall posted this. Washington State Democrats cut $1.2 billion from Medicaid and Apple Health in 2025 and 2026. Now they have the nerve to blame Trump for the damage. Dems controlled the House, Senate, governor's office, and the state budget. Every one of these cuts was their call. Dems cut care for seniors, people with disabilities, people who need long-term care, and the doctors, clinics, and hospitals trying to keep the doors open. Then they ran to the microphones and screamed at Trump like voters are too dumb to read a budget. Here's the truth. Washington Democrats cut health care. Dems own the fallout. And now they're using vulnerable Washington patients as political props to cover for their own failure, and as political props to try to make sure the initiative to repeal the income tax does not pass. Because, as you know, one of the things they're saying will just be hurt even further is healthcare if people vote against the initiative. We had Representative Matt Marshall was nice enough to join us on the show to talk further about Democrats just conveniently ignoring the own cuts, the cuts that they themselves have made to healthcare. Rep. Marshall, welcome to Undivided.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I think, and I didn't even know that this was your day. What is your day job?
So I do trauma surgery at some of the hospitals in Western Washington as a contractor.
Well, I think that I didn't know that, but it's also, I think, perfect for this conversation and for you to have an opinion about it and to weigh in on it. So to me, this is just such an obvious, lie by omission, I guess I would say. Why do you think that Democrats believe, and the governor and Patty Murray believe, they can talk about the cuts under the Trump administration, but just readily ignore the cuts that they made?
Well, I mean, it's just a classic setup. I mean, right now they don't want to take responsibility for the fact that they've been mismanaging the money of the state for, you know, potentially decades. And now that they are at a spot where it doesn't matter how much money they raise, we have a record budget, but cuts are somehow still needing to be made. So they make cuts where there are large amounts of spend so that it should have less of an impact. And they just want to deflect it because it's the best thing they can do. Because right now, the Democrats know that if they blame Trump for everything, that people buy it and they continue to win elections. So there's no reason for them to own it because nobody's calling them out.
So what are some of the healthcare related cuts Democrats made? And did Republicans support them in those cuts or oppose those cuts?
So the biggest cuts that were made were really in Apple Health. And so there have been two different types of cuts that happened. The first was 2025 here in Washington, Democrats' budget cut $740 billion in change. That was $370 million of actual state money and then over $400 million of lost potential match dollars. That funding affected hospitals, affected providers, clinicians, and then it really affected in some of the rehabilitation facilities. It affected autistic interventions, mental health. It was much more than just Apple Health and Medicaid. The cuts they made in healthcare were systemic across the board and are things that matter to Washingtonians. What the federal government's doing, in contrast, is the federal government is saying that there is now criteria for eligibility. You have to be legally in the United States at a baseline. You have to, if you're not at retirement age, you're not on Social Security disability, and you have the ability to work, you need to at least be looking for a job in a training program or volunteering. There are parameters in HR 1 that say if you don't meet these criteria, or if you're not working and you need the health care, you can still get it. They're not just cutting people off of it, except for people that are illegally in our country.
So I imagine you support what the Trump administration is doing. Is that fair?
Yeah, for the most part. You know, again, I have a little different lens. I like the idea of having requirements and not just having a handout for everybody, because at some point there needs to be personal accountability brought back into our society, and that's completely gone.
Yeah. And then what about the cuts that the Democratic Party made? Did you support those?
No, I don't know of any of my colleagues that supported those. I know that I did not. I spoke out against them on the House floor and highlighted several times in floor speeches about how the cuts that they were making were happening right here in Washington State, and to quit deflecting and saying that they needed to raise the taxes and generate more revenue because of Trump. This was highlighted during the income tax debate, where they're talking about how we need this income tax because we need more money for Medicaid, because HR1 is going to cut the Medicaid dollars. And I pointed out that they'd cut $1.2 billion between the operating budget for the biennium and then the supplemental. It was a total of $1.2 billion if you add all the cuts to healthcare.
So you mentioned something there that has been sort of a little bit of a conspiracy of mine. And tell me if you think it's off base. You know, they made cuts also to higher education, as an example, and then they complained about those cuts publicly. Senator Twyna Nobles is someone we've done a story on complaining about a cut to higher education that she actually voted for. My theory is that they make these cuts to specifically to bolster their case for something like the income tax on quote unquote millionaires. Do you believe that there's that much of a scheme to it, or that this was just the largest parts of the budget so they had to cut there?
No, I think there is a conspiracy or a scheme to what they've done with this income tax. You know, it was supposed to be providing tons of relief and get rid of the regressive taxes, but there's minimal regressive tax relief. And then if none of the millionaires were leaving the state of Washington like they are in droves, and businesses weren't leaving Washington like they are, if we were to realize all of the money that OPR said we should receive in a couple of years now from the income tax, that won't even close the gap on just K-12 education by 50% if we go back to what it needs to be funded at, if we got back to McCleary-level spending. So there's no way this money is going to stretch far enough, and cuts need to be made, but they can't be making cuts and then turning around and crying about the cuts and blaming the federal administration when it really is the fiscal mismanagement happening here in Washington.
Yeah, and I think you touched on it briefly, but just to end here, you know, when people look at their ballot in November and they see, you know, this statement to repeal the income tax, then they have the fiscal impact statement that says, you know, passing this will basically result in less funding for healthcare and education and higher education. What do you as a lawmaker want voters to know about that?
None of that money has been appropriated right now, so there is no fiscal impact. If you vote yes to repeal the income tax, nothing's going to change. It's just going to force the Democrats, the majority party, to go and actually balance a budget. Right now, it's just going to put more money into their slush fund and nothing's going to get better.
All right. State Rep. Matt Marshall, I appreciate the insight and the insight as a medical professional as well. I learned something new about our state lawmakers every single day. But that's why I like that we're a citizen legislature, because you guys are out there doing this work and bring that insight to you. So we appreciate you joining us. We'll let you get back to work, sir.
All right. Thank you, Brandy.
So that's State Representative Matt Marshall explaining. It's just a truth. Look, you can complain about what Trump is doing to healthcare if you want, but at least also point out that you have also made cuts to healthcare, but they don't care to be intellectually honest. And again, I really think this is about the initiative to repeal the income tax, because remember what the public investment impact disclosure on it says. So you've got the actual initiative language, and then because of a law that Democrats passed, they get to tack this little statement onto the end of it. It says this measure would decrease funding for public K through 12 education, higher education, and human services, primarily healthcare. So when Bob Ferguson says, hey, go tell your friends that about these draconian cuts that Trump made to healthcare, it's because they are going to push that as why you should, in their eyes, vote no on the initiative, because they're going to say we're in this healthcare crisis, but they won't. It wouldn't hit the same if they also admitted that, hey, we also have made cuts to healthcare. So they're just blaming it on Donald Trump. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, coming up next, a group of Democrats called Democrats for an Informed Approach to Gender is being put on notice, saying they are no longer allowed to call themselves Democrats. It's a wild story. First, you know the saying, save it for a rainy day? Probably not a good idea when it comes to your roof, because if you save fixing or replacing your roof for a rainy day, well, it's a little bit too late, right? So reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing. The first fall storms are just around the corner. Contractor schedules are filling up fast. So if a new roof has been on your to-do list, don't risk another wet fall and winter. Call Valentine Roofing now. It has the added bonus of making sure if you want to add the energy-saving insulation that your heater isn't working overtime when it gets cold out. With Valentine's priority scheduling, your new roof project can get started in as little as 3 weeks. In about an hour, you'll get a fair estimate with honest upfront pricing before the seasonal demand picks up. I use Valentine. Thousands of homeowners across Western Washington trust Valentine Roofing to protect what matters most. And with approved financing, there's no money down and you won't pay until your roof project is complete. So don't wait for the first leak. Call 206 Roofing today to get started within 3 weeks. That's 206 Roofing. And remember to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. By now, you've probably heard about the group Democrats for an Informed Approach to Gender. We've talked about them. I think we've even interviewed an individual from that group on our show. They have been really great allies in the fight to restore parental rights and to protect girls' sports. And they happen to be Democrats. They voted Democrat, you know, their whole lives, most of them, who think that the radical gender ideology stuff is just nonsense. You know, a lot of the people who belong to Democrats for an Informed Approach to Gender are also part of groups like the LGB Courage Coalition, where it's just like, guys, this stuff has gone too far. Here's their website, biology, not ideology. We are liberals guiding our party back to reason and sanity. And they call the radical gender stuff not scientific, not medicine, and not liberal. And so they, rather than abandoning their party, which is what I would recommend, they want to try to fix it, if it is indeed fixable. But now they are being told, dare I say ordered, by the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, who also happens to be a co-chair of the National Democratic Party, that they must remove the name Democrat from the title of their organization, as if she can force them to do that. She put out a condemnation of the group. Washington Democratic Party chair condemns anti-trans group, Democrats for an Informed Approach to Gender. She calls it a California-based anti-trans organization, is listed as a signer for the four arguments on Let's Go Washington's initiatives in Washington voter pamphlets, which there's a bunch of dyad groups across the country. There is a Washington-based dyad group, and that's the one that has signed on to support the Let's Go Washington initiatives on girls' sports and parental rights. And so she's trying to frame it as a California-based group, but they have, subgroups all over the country. It says Washington Democrats Chair Shasti Conrad condemns use of the party name in an anti-trans organization and calls upon the organization to cease usage of the word Democrats in their organization's name. There is no place for hate in Washington state, she says. Our trans community deserves the same safety and welcome in the Democratic Party as anyone else. Okay, clearly there's not safety and welcome for everyone in the Democratic Party because you're literally telling them you are not Democrats. Don't call yourselves Democrats. I call upon this viciously anti-trans organization to cease using our party as cover for their hate-filled agenda. Transphobia has no place in the Washington State Democratic Party. To our trans and non-binary members of our community, we say unequivocally, you belong, you make our party stronger, you are loved, and we stand with you in the fight against all forms of bigotry and hate. Jeepers, so much for the big tent theory. The tent is big enough for the socialists and the communists, but it's not big enough for the Democrats who don't want boys and girls sports, apparently. Let every Washington voter know Washington Democrats have no affiliation with this out-of-state, out-of-touch organization meddling in our initiative process. Washington Democrats urge every voter to vote no on every statewide initiative on your ballot in the November general election pushed by mega, mega millionaire Brian Haywood. I like that. Mega, mega millionaire Brian Haywood. What is a mega millionaire, you know? I know what a MAGA millionaire is, but what makes someone a mega millionaire? Like, what do you have to reach? It's just...
Like over 500 million?
Sure. Yeah. Is that then a mega millionaire? Anyway, so this party that has said as of late that they want to be a big tent party when they're asked about socialism, when they're asked about communism, they want to be a big tent party, yet they say that Democrats who don't think boys are girls literally cannot even use the word Democrats. And might I remind you, we've gone over the polling on this from Pew Research. The vast majority of Democrats don't think boys are girls. So we're talking like, if for Democrats, it's like 60 to 75%, depending on the polls, that are like, no, we don't want boys and girls sports. So what, are you saying like 60 to 75% of Democrats are no longer allowed to be affiliated with you? I feel like that's a very bad electoral policy. And it just shows like, if you have any sort of dissent, they will readily welcome the socialists. You know why? Because they are socialists. They will readily welcome the communists. You know why? Because they are communists. But they won't readily welcome people who have the very reasonable opinion that boys aren't girls. So DIAG responded to this. We are Washington State supporters of Democrats for an informed approach to gender, writing in response to your press release. Your characterization of our views as viciously anti-trans and hate-filled and bigoted and transphobic are good examples of how out of touch the Democratic Party is with the majority of voters, even within your own party. Our positions align with most Americans and most Democrats, yet expressing these mainstream views makes us a target of Democratic Party vitriol and demonization. Your intolerant reaction is a good example of why the Democratic Party can no longer be characterized as a big tent party. Not only are the Democratic Party's positions on these issues wrong on their merits, but they're also hurting the Democratic Party politically. Yeah, Kamala Harris is for they, them. Trump is for you. I mean, I would argue that's a big reason these nonsense issues why President Trump won a second term. And they go on to say, we believe the sex-based rights of women and girls should be protected, et cetera. The Democratic Party was once a champion of women's rights. It's out of step with voters. And I couldn't agree more. It's like, yeah, Democrats championed Title IX, including Democrats in our state 20-odd years ago, and now what, Title IX is transphobic? Literally makes no sense. All right, let's get to a double dose of unbelievable. All right, this takes us to Bellingham Public Schools. A mother sent us this. From Bellingham Public Schools, there's something that they use called the Skyward Mobile Access app. So essentially, parents and kids can use it. They can check grades, attendance, school updates, like emergency alerts, things like that. So a Bellingham parent emailed us screenshots of a questionnaire that said that they were required to fill out. You see it in the red writing. Required, okay? Verify your students' ethnicity and race. Okay. So you think that's easy enough? Like, hey, no big deal. Like, am I white? Am I Hispanic? Am I black? Like, what is it? So it says, what is your student's race category. Is your child of Hispanic or Latino origin? And again, this is required, right? And then it says, what races do you consider your child? Select all that apply. Now, I'm thinking, if I just read those first two questions, like, how much more in depth do you want? Like, you know, if I say, I'm white, or I'm black, or my kid's Asian, or American Indian, like, isn't that enough? Oh. No, it's not enough, okay? So there's a drop-down menu of possible races you could consider your child, and you are to select all that apply. Shall we look at the options, Nicole? Oh, wow. Okay, so we've got quite a bit. Some of them are tribal, a lot of them tribal. Are you the Jamestown Scalum tribe, the Maka Indian tribe, the Nooksack tribe, Port Gamble, et cetera, et cetera? There can't be much more, right, though? Let's keep, oh my gosh, holy smokes. Bhutanese, Burmese, Cambodian, Chinese, Filipino, Hmong, Indonesian, Malaysian, Mien, Mongolian, Nepali, Okinawan, Taiwanese, Thai, Tibetan, Vietnamese. This has got to be, we got to be getting close to the end, right? Oh my God. Martiniquais. What is that? Martiniquais. Mauritanian. Montserratian. Okay, what? I haven't heard of some of these places. Oh, Mozambican. I know which one that is. Seychellois. South African. That one's pretty straightforward. Surinamese. Swazi. Ugandan. Zambian. Oh, we got to the Z's, but then there's more. I thought it would end with the Z's. All right, goes down to Egyptian. Okay, that's it, right, though. Oh, my gosh, there's some more. Israeli, I'm surprised they allowed that one on there. Russian, Saudi Arabia. I mean, hundreds of options. And they say it's not optional to fill it out. And this mom's like, I don't want to do this. So she just filled it in, saying with little statements, it is illegal to require documentation of race, could lead to discriminatory practices. Oops, not sure, so I'll just identify as the world. And then she asks, why is there no Northern or Western European options? So all those like countries and stuff, origins that they've listed, there aren't any options on there that break down like Northern and Western Europe. Isn't that odd? You've got like things I've never even heard of in here. But then you don't break down Northern and Western Europe. There's Eastern European, where you can write it in, but that's it. Only Eastern European. Isn't that strange? Is it because, like, if you have white skin, they, like, kind of don't care where on the planet you're from? They're just focused on, like, minority groups? Guys, what is going on? It's like that time I walked into that hospital, and they presented me with a list of gender identities, and it was, like, 600 gender identities long, and I wanted to turn around and walk out, and I probably should have. So this is what the Bellingham School District told us in a statement about this. They basically blame the state of Washington. This form is part of our enrollment packet. It is a one-time form filled out by families upon enrollment of their child. Along with all school districts in Washington, our district follows the guidance and requirements from the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction. For collection of race and ethnicity student data, we refer you to OSPI for more information. If a family has limited information about their child's heritage, per OSPI guidance, we encourage them to provide the best information they have. Because apparently, was it adopted? Yeah, she said, my son is adopted. We have no way of knowing who his biological father is. So I told him to feel free to make it awkward by saying that if anyone at school brings it up.
I mean, are you supposed to get 23andMe and investigate?
That's what it sounds like, right? You are 11% Eastern European and whatever it is. But it's like, you know, I don't even think you should have to provide any. But isn't the white box or the black box?
And you know,
isn't it enough? Or Native American?
And you know, those 23andMe, it also can tell you, I mean, up to like 0.05%. So does that 0.05% get you some scholarships?
Yeah, what is this getting me?
What,
are we talking about like
purpose?
Elizabeth Warren percentages, right, of Native American? Because I'll dig deep in here if I'm going to get some free stuff out of it.
And or what is, probably more accurately, what is the state getting for saying that you are some of these things?
Yeah, they want to be, oh, it's diversity numbers. They're trying to bolster diversity numbers.
Because what do they get for doing that?
Yeah, I agree. All right, we'll get to national news and the Lindsay Clancy mistrial coming up next. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. You can become a member. They can help you on an individual basis navigate some of the stringent policies that are passing by the day. They also look out for private property rights in court and down in Olympia. So that's part of what your membership helps to support. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right, I'm just going to touch on this briefly, only because I want your opinion about it. The Lindsay Clancy thing's obviously been covered in every corner of the internet, so I'm not sure I have anything particularly interesting to say about it. But you've probably seen the interviews coming out with some of the jurors. So again, it was like 11 to 1 in favor of not guilty by reason of insanity. And some of the women, I think there was 9 women on the jury, they're giving interviews just blasting the one holdout guy who's like, yeah, I'm not finding her not guilty by reason of insanity. Here's what some of the jurors are saying.
He was very arrogant. He really did not take anything that anybody said.
He had reasonable doubt. He admitted he had reasonable doubt. I started filling out the forms. I was so excited.
Excited?
There were 3 forms I had to fill out, and I started filling them out. I wrote my signature on each one, and then he said, but I'm still not going to say that she's not guilty by reason of insanity.
I'm not sure if rogue is the right word, Sue. We read to him on numerous occasions the definition of reasonable doubt from Judge Sullivan's instruction. This is the definition of reasonable doubt. But he had the hardest time getting off the fact that Lindsay viciously killed her children.
Imagine having a hard time getting over something like that. I mean, then these women were talking about how, oh, some of us are nurses and teachers, and he wouldn't listen to the nurses on our professional opinion. He's not supposed to. That's literally against the jury instructions. You can't substitute a juror's expertise for the expertise of the witnesses. And just to say, that woman saying, I was so excited. How could you ever be excited in a situation like that? Even if you were about to return a verdict, it's still a verdict against a woman who brutally killed her kids. What makes anyone excited about that? So, I look, as far as I'm concerned, God bless that man, because I can only imagine how vicious those women were to him in the jury room for him standing up for his convictions. Now, I don't know if he violated jury instructions and if he truly said, I just have reasonable doubt and didn't, you know, bypass that in order to find the not guilty by reason of insanity. I also think it's horrible, Lindsay Clancy's defense attorney, how he came out and just publicly berated this man, said he wasted 7 weeks of everyone's lives. Like, to me, that's totally inappropriate for a defense attorney, for prosecutors to do. And to, I mean, imagine trying to seat another jury where it's like you're trying to ruin this man's life. And so I hope that that defense attorney gets in trouble from the judge for his public comments about this juror. But I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, because frankly, I mean, I do watch a lot of Dateline. An 11 to 1 verdict, if you're the prosecution, is not great.
You better at least change your tactic.
Well, yeah, something. You have to interview the jurors, figure out how you weren't able to make your case. And so I asked, do you think, given that it was 11 to 1, if prosecutors, do you think they should attempt to retry Lindsay Clancy?
I do. I mean, I think there has to be some resolution here. I guess, yeah, I don't know. Maybe wait until the public has kind of calmed down about it, because I think this was just very influenced by social media and the public. But I don't know. I think you might have to wait a while, but I think eventually you do. She murdered her kids.
Yeah.
I mean, there has to be some sort of justice.
90% of you say yes. And look, I think that, you know, there was an option for them to find her not guilty by reason of mental insanity. And that is a verdict. And that would keep her, I believe, in a mental institution for, if not the rest of her life, a very, very long time. So if not for any other reason, like, yeah, maybe you come back and they get a full verdict. But the other option is what? Just letting her go? I mean, I don't know. So I feel like you have to retry her. Adorable Deplorable says, God bless the one. Linda says there needs to be justice for those kids, as well as her husband, who lost everything. She planned it out. She knew what she was doing. Theodore says change of venue may help, but pushing for a bench trial would likely be best, as the whole jury pool nationally may be tainted given the extensive media coverage. But that's the thing, is that the prosecution doesn't get to decide if it's a bench trial. You get to choose whether you want to be tried by a jury of your peers. And her defense attorney knows that the very best option for her is to be tried by a jury of her peers, which is going to include some women who are sort of in this emotional realm when it comes to this particular issue. Bully Mom says it stinks for the families and the victims, but she needs to be held accountable for her actions, in my opinion, anyway. Yeah, it's tough, but 11 to 1, that's a big flip to try to make at a trial. I think I watched Dateline episode once where they were able to come back from something like that and get a conviction. But and Dateline is real life, but still, I mean, it's brutal either way. All right. I know this happened a couple days ago, but I just had to talk about it because I think it's funny. Have you seen the Trump Arcade? So the White House, here's a video.
Sega!
Oh, no. Deportations. The White House has this arcade where you can go and play all these games that sort of line up with Trump's agenda. So there's Build the Wall. It's like a Tetris type game where you build the wall across the southern border. There's Rio Run, which is a snake style game where you patrol the Rio Grande and detain border crossers. There's Supply Line, which is a Tapper-inspired game. You sort or reject food items based on the Make America Healthy Again guidelines, which I like that one. I think that's cute. Like, yeah. Put a healthy lunch together. There's the Trump Savings Tycoon, which is a game focused on collecting falling money to fill kids' Trump accounts. And then there's Flappy Bill, a Flappy Bird clone where a bald eagle carries legislation across the National Mall. And of course, the media is just melting down about this. It's a full-fledged meltdown.
It did make me want to play Sonic again. I love that music.
Yeah. White House launches arcade.gov with computer game that lets players deport migrants. Trump White House launches arcade games with games to build the wall and deport migrants. Then they talk to people who are like offended by it. Right now, if I go to the list. I'm being honest, okay, allow me to be honest for one moment. I think that the deport migrants thing, patrol the border, is probably a little too much toward propaganda.
Okay.
Now, let's think about, like, priorities of the Biden administration. So let's think if they're like, hey, kids. Help us cut breasts off a perfectly healthy teen girl. you got to go in and just slice and dice.
Ugh.
I'm not comparing that to enforcing our nation's immigration laws, but I'm just saying, like, oh, here's a game. It's like, what's the little game where you build kind of like a family and a house and all, Sims. Oh, yeah, man. And it was all about like, here, build a gay family or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that if we're okay with presidents sort of using their agenda to create these games, I feel like it could get very out of hand. That being said, some of them are completely harmless. Helping make a healthy lunch. Like, oh, pick items that make a lunch healthy. That's a great lesson.
Yes.
Teaching kids how to eat healthy is not controversial. The one that it has a bird... carrying legislation across the National Mall. What's wrong with that? You're teaching kids how the process works, right? Like, oh, we're taking it from Congress. I mean, I realize a bald eagle doesn't carry it to the president's desk to be signed. And then the savings tycoon, helping kids learn how to save money. Why are you looking at me like that?
No, I'm actually with you. I think the Rio Run one is probably the most problematic because you're actually like helping border guards detain, like send people back. Like that one might be a little bit insensitive, I would say.
Yeah, it's just think of it used by someone you don't agree with politically.
Exactly. The build the wall, I don't know. Like that's just an animate object that a wall. Who cares?
Right? And Democrats and Republicans have built walls over the years, by the way.
I mean, lots of people build walls.
It's just so creative. I kind of love it, but I think some of it's a little bit like, okay, now you're opening the door for the Democrats to start some really weird games in their arcade on a government website.
I love that now Tetris is mad. But they must have got the okay from Sega to use that sound.
Because, I don't know. Maybe they altered it slightly.
Well, it says Mega instead of Sega. But,
well, I know, but the sound. I don't know if it's exactly the same or if they have, you know, copyright on it or something. So
anyway, but I think it's clever.
It is clever. All their websites are really good under the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. They're like not typical boring government websites.
Oh, I don't remember ever visiting a government website before Trump got in there and made them interesting and easier to read, really, and easier to understand.
Yeah, I mean, putting money in my nephew's Trump accounts took like a minute. So simple. It really was.
So cool.
All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. First, investors are focused on AI, crypto, and tech, but you also want to make sure they're paying enough attention to what's happening in energy, because energy impacts every sector of the economy. So reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital for a free second opinion with their Know Your Risk portfolio review. Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management. They're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get that second opinion? Doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast YouTube channel and on all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk podcast. All right. Before I start comments, we did have an issue with the Facebook live stream today. Mm-hmm. Facebook has had some problems in the last couple weeks that are not related to us.
Get Mark
on
the phone.
So don't blame us. Mark Zuckerberg, can you tell us what's going on? So hopefully you found your way over to YouTube.
Right.
All right. On the illegal and the immigrant, two different things. One illegal, one immigrant, mm-hmm. who are accused of raping local teen girls. Baron of Gray Matter says the left wants you scared and panicked. Then they blame guns and migrant phobia and beg for more money. Dumb, lazy lefties keep voting for Democrats. Yeah, I'm just, again, so interested to see what happens when Trump's out of office, who the boogeyman is then, and whether that boogeyman is as effective as Trump is as a boogeyman.
Robert Lawson says, how long before an activist judge releases them?
Well, their bail is $500,000 and $200,000. I know that ICE is now aware of one of them. I might have
tipped them.
I mean, in the course of doing my job, I think I let ICE know that there was an illegal accused of raping teen girls.
If they didn't know already.
If they didn't know already. So if they make bail, hopefully ICE is able to pick them up, the one up. And I also do think, and that's why I want to know when the one was naturalized, as my source says they mm-hmm. were, because I do believe there's a window of time when you can take back naturalization.
Oh.
So I need to see what that window is and where that is. So we're waiting. Mm-hmm. ICE, we've been in touch. For some reason, it takes... I do have to complain a little bit about ICE and DHS. We do so many of these stories, it takes them forever to get back to us to verify. It's like, this story actually really helps the president's agenda to show.
Forever, you mean sometimes weeks.
Sometimes weeks.
Weeks.
And it's like, and they have like regional spokespeople, mm-hmm. and I'm like, you guys, I'm handing you one on a silver freaking platter. Get back to me.
I don't get
it. It's just, it's really frustrating. I know they're busy, but for the love of God. John says that quantity of drugs is automatically a federal crime. And I don't know. I know the FBI was involved in the Joint Task Force takedown. So I imagine if the feds want it, the feds will take it.
JB New says they justify that there are only two immigrants when there are thousands that don't do it. It is only two. It's okay. If it's only two, it's okay because most don't do it according to Dems.
Yeah, they always say, that doesn't happen. Oh, if it does, it's not very much.
But again, what if it's your child? What if it's your family member that this happens to? So
it's easy to dismiss it, right? On Seattle leaders wanting a consultant to deal with gun crime, Greg Olakis says, I have never once had to punish my gun because of its violence. Right.
Uh-huh. For triggering itself.
For triggering itself.
Callie Williamson says, if we follow the language choice of the interim SPD chief, it's no longer shootings, but trigger pullings.
Trigger pullings.
Just referencing.
On Democrats blaming Trump for cuts to health care, Milkman, wait, Bob is going to use more of our money to fight to save our money? No way. Yeah. Got to fight back against Trump. So we'll spend millions of dollars doing it.
It's really wild. And I will say there was a little bit of press in the room. I'm not really sure. I couldn't see how many, but not really any questions regarding
their own cuts to healthcare.
Their own cuts.
Yeah.
So Maybe we need to like emphasize those things more.
Yeah. Ryan, the OG, there should be a flight tax for politicians. No more burning the building down and leaving the ashes. Yeah. If you're governor, you have to pay a dollar out of your own pocket every time someone leaves the state.
Yeah, on the high school kids having to over 100 race identification options. Crafty Grandma Crispy says, I'm Irish. Where is that option?
Yeah, I don't think it was on there. Weisscastle, Trump needs to issue an emergency order that American be listed as a race on all federal forms.
Hey, that's I'm American. If you put that in his head,
yeah,
that wouldn't make its way there.
He wants to change New Mexico to New America. I'm like, can you stop trolling him, buddy? We're 2 months out from the midterms. Just let it go.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Too funny.
We need the focus to be on their poor choices, not Trump's silly choices.
I agree. He really just gets me going sometimes, sir, with all due respect. All right. We'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, there's a lot happening in the state's economy, tech layoffs, a lot of people fleeing. And of course, as our friend Wes Jones with Sell with Wes points out, that does impact the real estate market.
Housing values are still very, very high.
Yeah.
Interest rates are back up into the mid sixes, you know, putting additional financial pressure, you know, on what it costs to purchase a home and to qualify. The tech layoffs, like this is probably icing on the cake to start to see a bit of a market slowdown. Yeah. So you got people who should be buying right now who aren't. Consumer confidence is lower than it has been in quite some time.
Yeah. So what I would say is if you're kind of thinking about, he has a lot of clients, frankly, that are leaving the state or at the early stages of just considering that process, the earlier you get in touch with Wes, the better. And by all means, you know, reach out to a few real estate agents, your brother's ex-wife's cousin, Shelly, who started doing it two weeks ago. See what she has to offer. But then reach out to Wes Jones. No offense, Shelly. If you're a real person, I apologize. You're probably great. But, you know, Wes has been doing this for a really long time. He's been through all the market ups and downs. Go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, a U.S. Senate candidate in Rhode Island is just so annoyed with the media. So annoyed with the media. Karishma Mansour, running as a Democrat, asked by MSNBC about ties to socialists.
Do you consider yourself a socialist or a capitalist? Again, trying to help voters understand where you are.
I'm just a regular American trying to improve people's lives right here in New Hampshire. We are the richest country in the world, and I believe that anyone who works
Do you consider yourself a socialist or a capitalist?
I consider myself to be a scientist.
A scientist?
I'm a scientist. I'm not an ideologue. Yes.
But when you put yourself on the ballot, people like to have some understanding of how these things work. So you won't answer a specific yes or no on that?
But interestingly, it's only the media that are asking the question. I'm talking to people who are just excited talking about the fact that they don't have livable wages.
Good for that NBC News Now host who's like grilling her on it, as she should. It's an easy question. And when you dodge, I never get when I end this podcast, I'm going to become a political consultant and I'm going to be the highest paid political consultant on the planet because I'm going to give them the best advice. And dodging a question six times is never the best solution. It only makes things worse. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Appreciate every single one of you. I do have a slight bit more appreciation, however, for our paid subscribers who give up $5 of their hard-earned money every month to make this show possible. If you'd like to be one of them, go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com, click on the banner that says support the show, and that's it. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.